Welcome in, everyone. 3:05. Thank you for tuning in to a Monday edition of the Gym Class, August 6th. Yes, August 6th. The start of high school football practices for most teams today. Good luck to all the coaches and the players out there. We've either gone through that first practice or coming up here this afternoon. Scott Unash's previews of Metro High School teams beginning this Saturday on the Coach's Corner program, 9 a.m. If I'm not mistaken, it's Jefferson, Prairie, and Xavier this coming Saturday. If you happen to miss any of the previews, we will have those archived on our podcast at kgymradio.com. Mark Dukes, pleased to join you today. Scott Unash, his last week of vacation for the year as he gets recharged for the start of the football season, which is just a couple days away. Kyle Mann, our producer, joining me today and all week, and I'm pleased about that. Kyle, how are you?
I'm good. I'm ready for the week. I got a lot on my plate today. I'm here with you, and I'm actually also filling in on the gym on the Todd Brommelkamp show today. It's me and Alex, so I'm going to be set up here with this microphone for the next 4 hours.
I mentioned substitute teacher in the opening. When you had a substitute teacher in school, what was your first thought?
Oh God, Mark, you didn't know me when I was in school.
It was a screw off day, right?
Oh yeah, I'll say it like this. On one occasion, you've probably heard people say this, and they were exaggerating. We had when I was in seventh grade, we had a sub for my homeroom teacher, and this person literally flipped their lid and told us right there in the classroom. You know, their voice raised. I wouldn't quite say yelling. They stayed professional, but they said, "I'm never coming back to this school. I can't deal with you guys. I am never coming back to this school."
God, that'd be a tough thing to do, wouldn't it? Substitute teacher.
Yeah, and I mean, you get a call. I mean, you kind of have to be ready all the time, right?
Yeah.
You don't know when a teacher's going to get sick. You get a call at 6 a.m. Got to get up and get going.
I mean, you're sort of our substitute teacher today, but we're not going to abuse you.
Please,
we're not going to take advantage of you.
Please don't.
I don't think.
I need to stay here for a while.
The Cedar Rapids Colonels have busted a 5-game losing streak, defeating Beloit 3-2 this afternoon in a noon game at Veterans Memorial Stadium, Perfect Game Field. Edouard Colina, 8 innings pitched, 4 hits, 2 runs, none earned for the Colonels. So that's good to see the Colonels taking a temporary lead in the division. Peoria plays tonight. It's pretty much a 3-horse race right now in the division. The Colonel's still pretty well positioned for at least a wild card spot in the playoffs for the second half. So good to see the Colonels breaking that losing streak. Tonight, Twins Indians, game 1 of 4. We will join it in progress at 7 p.m. 107.5 FM. I don't know how pivotal a series it is. The Indians with a 9-game lead in the division. I'm calling this division. I'm calling the American League East. We can talk baseball later on. Twins would need to sweep to get within 5 games, and still, I don't think that's going to be enough in the long run for the Twins to overtake the Indians. But nevertheless, game 1 of 4 tonight against the Indians, and we'll join it in progress. We talked a lot on Friday about the statement issued by Urban Meyer, the Ohio State football coach who is serving a paid leave of absence. And news just coming down today out of another school. Kyle, perhaps you can detail it. And it comes out east. And the penalties players are going to serve based on what they did. Let's compare that, folks, if you will, to the Urban Meyer situation. Is that fair or not? I don't know. But let's do it for the fun of it. 319-366-1600. That's our Hertzien and Stocker Jeweler text line. Kyle, what happened today?
Yeah, all right. Anybody familiar with kind of, you could call it the shoe game, maybe won't be so surprised that this happened at this particular school, but this just came down about 20 minutes ago. 13 North Carolina football players have been suspended at least one game, some up to four games, after they were caught selling school-issued special edition Jordan shoes. And that's classified as a secondary NCAA violation. And, you know, you've got their starting quarterback there, a starting defensive lineman. Some of those guys, nine players in total, suspended for four games, two suspended for two games, and two suspended for one game.
Meanwhile, we await what's going to happen to Urban Meyer, the Ohio State football coach, who, again, is on paid leave right now for, what would you say? What's he on paid leave for? Lying? Deceiving? Allowing an assistant coach to be on his staff?
Yeah.
Why is he suspended?
I guess at this point, he hasn't necessarily... I mean, we the onlookers, the observers, we know he lied at Big Ten Media Day, but I don't think if you talk to Ohio State, I don't think that would be what they said that he's on leave for. I think what they would probably say, especially to be, you know, politically correct about it, I think they would just say that he's on administrative leave right now while they investigate his role in what happened there. But yeah, I don't think that they necessarily have said that he's done anything wrong.
I find it interesting that the committee that has been assembled said they are going to expect a verdict in 2 weeks and a decision in 2 weeks. God, if Robert Mueller would have done that, that would have been great. But getting into politics, and I'm not going to go down that road. But I find that interesting too, because you know that's going to be a decision within a couple weeks, and maybe it's not really fair to compare the North Carolina situation to Urban Meyer, but these kids are going to lose four games for selling shoes, and it's an NCAA violation. They obviously profited from. I got to wonder, what's the difference in the various probations? Four games, two games, one game. And they sell a bunch of shoes. I don't know. I haven't read enough into it, but, are players going to be penalized more than a head coach is for allowing an alleged sexual assault to happen, to have this guy on his staff, to lie about it at Big Ten Football Media Days, or at least deceive? I shouldn't say lie. That's I could get in trouble for that, but... At least deceive. Who do we got on the line? No. Nope.
We had Joe. He thought he had second thoughts about his comments today.
Okay.
He's going to save him for now.
Okay, no worries.
You brought it up about maybe juxtaposing this North Carolina scandal with the situation at Ohio State, and I think it's I don't want to say premature. It's just we don't have the punishment yet for Urban Meyer. I think... Best case scenario, at least, okay, I'm not even going to claim to know how this is going to turn out, but I think ideally, even if he doesn't lose his job, he has to get suspended for at least two, three, four, or five games. He has to get some sort of suspension, I would think. And when that happens, then it would be interesting to compare, because we've got this whole, culture of domestic abuse and sexual violence and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, over the last few years, the question has justifiably been raised is how seriously does college athletics take this stuff? And so we've got nine players here at North Carolina suspended four games for selling shoes. I'll be very interested to see how that compares to Urban Meyer suspension, should he get one.
On the text line, Ryan from Walford weighing in on Urban Meyer. My issue with Urban is that he knew for sure his assistant coach was beating his wife, and he made the decision to keep him on the staff. I don't care that he took the proper steps.
Exactly. And we can sit here and talk about the formalities, the legalities of all this stuff. Did he tell his boss? Did he pass it up the line like he should have? We can talk about that as much as we want, but when it comes down to it, we had another texter when Alex and I were doing the show on Friday say it basically boils down to one thing, which is that Urban Meyer protected the abuser rather than protect the victim. And you don't really need to know a whole lot more than that.
Let's remember, Zach Smith has not been charged with anything. The late Earl Bruce and Urban Meyer's life coach reportedly went to Zach Smith's wife at one time and pleaded with her not to press charges. And that's a sad situation in and of itself.
Yeah.
Zach Smith being Earl Bruce's grandson. So, be that as it may, I only bring it up. There's no new news on Urban Meyer. I only bring it up in light of the North Carolina player situation that these kids are going to pay a pretty heavy price for selling a pair of shoes.
Yeah, and they, well, who knows how long this investigation's been going on, but they released, Ohio State released the statement yesterday that they expect this investigation to take 2 weeks. And kind of like I just said, we know what happened here. We don't know what happened behind the scenes. We don't know who he told, if he told the right person, yada, yada. But we do know that he kept a domestic abuser on his staff.
He pushed the blame on somebody else.
Yeah. And so we kind of know what Urban Meyer did. When you boil it down, we know what Urban Meyer did. And the longer this takes, each passing day, and now they're saying it's going to take 2 weeks, the longer it takes, the less likely it is that he loses his job. Because, like I said, we know what he did. If it was a fireable offense, if Ohio State thought it was fireable, you know, we'd already know that. They'd already be moving towards that.
Let's leave Urban Meyer right now on that note. And I want to talk just a brief period of time before we bring in Mark Morehouse of the Cedar Rapids Gazette about the Pro Football Hall of Fame induction ceremonies. And I thought it was, I mean, the highlight of last Thursday's Chicago and Baltimore Hall of Fame game, the highlights were the interviews with the Hall of Famers. There's no question about it. And like always, many of the speeches were very emotional, very heartfelt. And then you had Terrell Owens deciding that he would not participate in the ceremonies in Canton and instead have his own soiree at the University of Tennessee, Chattanooga, at which he received his jacket and gave a speech. Kyle, originally I thought this was, and I guess I still do, it was self-serving on Terrell Owens' part. No matter how he feels about the Hall of Fame voting or the NFL, imagine how Jerry Kramer felt about it. Kramer waited 40, 50 years to get into the Hall of Fame. He was the guy who had the textbook block that sprung Bart Starr into the end zone in the Ice Bowl. And he did so many other things for those Packers to earn a seat in the Hall of Fame. Imagine how he felt about Terrell Owens. But then I thought, you know, you talk about the Grammy Awards, you talk about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. You've got entertainers and groups that, for one reason or another, don't show up. Academy Awards, somebody's on location doing a film. Terrell Owens wasn't on location. He decided to do this to serve himself. And now the Pro Football Hall of Fame is considering requiring their inductees to attend the ceremonies. Don't glorify what Terrell Owens did. Don't even go down that path. Because, Kyle, as you think about today's NFL players and possible Hall of Famers, who would do what Terrell Owens would do in today's game? Well, we don't know what the game's going to be like in 20 years and the future Hall of Famers. Terrell's an outlier, though, isn't he? I mean, I would think nearly all players who get inducted into the Hall of Fame are going to be eternally grateful and go to the ceremony. I could be wrong. There might be a player out there who's going to do the same thing. But please, Pro Football Hall of Fame, don't go down that route and require guys to be there because you're only underscoring what Terrell Owens did.
This whole Terrell Owens thing, there's so many different ways to unpack it. And I kind of like that question that you bring up. Who would do this anymore? I kind of think, who are going to be Hall of Famers?
Tom Brady's
right now?
Not going to do it.
Oh, no. I'm thinking of, you know, Antonio Brown has a little bit of a diva quality to him, but I don't, not like this. Odell Beckham, you know, he's a, you know, he's kind of a loose cannon, but not like that, I don't think. I think the reason Terrell Owens ended up doing what he did is kind of, you know, Terrell Owens is an outlier. He's so unique. And it goes back to his playing days, and that's kind of why we are where we are. You know, Terrell Owens, when I think about this, it basically comes down to this. I don't like the fact that Terrell Owens was by himself. He went and did his own thing. He had to have his own stage. You know, even if he was really bitter, even if he's really upset with the Hall of Fame, go to that ceremony. Tell him. Tell him to their face. You know, if you're really that upset, if that's what you want to do, then tell him right there at the ceremony. He should have been there. But with that said, I understand the sentiment behind it. I understand why he did what he did. Because the Hall of Fame, Terrell Owens is a top three receiver all time. It's Jerry mm-hmm. Rice, Terrell Owens, Randy Moss. There's no discussion. He's top three all time. The Hall of Fame is designed to tell the story of football. You cannot tell the story of football without Terrell Owens. He should have been a first ballot Hall of Famer. And to keep him out just because he wasn't a great teammate, maybe you don't like him as a person, you know, you're the Hall of Fame, okay? You're not a fraternity, okay? You're not taking pledges. He should have been in. He should have handled it differently after the fact, you know? I know he didn't like the way he was treated, but the Hall of Fame shouldn't. He should have been in right away.
I agree, but beyond that, who cares? You're being taken in 2018, and maybe not in your on the first ballot. But you can say that about how many baseball players?
Yeah, and
Tom Seaver,
Jerry Kramer. Jerry Kramer was a great contrast to have there.
I think probably part of the problem is, as it is in baseball, the football, the people that vote in it. I mean, to my way of thinking, you should have partly media, those veterans that have covered the NFL for, let's just say 15, 20 years, just whatever. And then another portion, the existing members of the Hall of Fame. They know the game better than anybody else.
Yep, you'd think.
There's no doubt about it. Couple comments on the Hurtine and Stocker Jeweler text line, and we appreciate that. 8676, if you can't show up, you shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame. But a lot of people feel the same way. 2134, to paraphrase Danny Green, he is who we thought he was.
And that's definitely the truth. I mean, in some ways, I wish he could have been there. I wish this could have been a, you know, not so messy. But this is Terrell Owens. This was kind of maybe the perfect way to put a bow on it. He was always a diva. He was always about himself. So why not go out like this? You know, I don't like the way it looks. I would prefer it a different way, you know, the regular way. But in Terrell Owens' story of his career, kind of perfect.
5081 on the text line, you say, who cares he wasn't a first ballot Hall of Famer? Who cares he didn't attend the ceremony? Let people do what they want to do. Okay, it's 2018. Let people do what they want to do. We're going to take a break right now. And when we come back, we're going to visit with Mark Morehouse of the Gazette. After visiting with Mark, we're going to give you an opportunity to win tickets to Fry Fest coming up at the end of the month. We'll tell you more about that. And when we come back, we'll talk with Mark Morehouse. Welcome back. 3:26 today on the Gym Class. Mark Dukes and Kyle Mann with you today. As always, the Gym Class sponsored by Third Base. On the corner of Blairs Ferry Road and C Avenue, just like KGYM, Third Base is locally owned and operated, a place where families meet up again and again. Great for a quick lunch, catch a game after work, or bring the family in for an affordable and delicious meal. And please ask about the Third Base Mug Club. For $25, you get a lifetime membership off happy hour price beers and free appetizers with every $100 you spend. Check out Third Base Brewery, the corner of Blairs Ferry Road and C Avenue in Cedar Rapids. Thanks to Third Base, as always. Right now, very pleased and thrilled to have our friend Mark Morehouse join us. Late notice, but still sincere invitation. Appreciate you coming on, Mark.
No problem, Mark. Anytime, man.
Like many, I've been following hashtag KF143. And it's if you're unfamiliar, and why should you be, because it's online and it's in the print version as well, but Mark Morehouse, photographers, and others have been counting down each of Kirk Ferentz's 143 victories. And if I'm not mistaken, Mark, this coming Sunday will be the final couple dozen. I'm interested in the process by which you went about this.
Well, it wasn't very well thought out. I looked at the games in the back of the media guide and the place where Kirk Ferentz starts. I think everybody who's a sports writer is familiar with the season results, and you go through, and I basically all I did was go through the season results, which left out a ton of detail. I mean, I go through games, and the first example that kind of really slapped me in the face was the Greenford-Greenwood game. It was Louisiana-Monroe. I'm blanking on the year. I want to say 20, maybe 10 or 9, somewhere in there, maybe 11. And that was a Greenwood game. It was Brett Greenwood. It was after he had his incident where his heart stopped, and he has the brain injury now. But he had the students, I think it was the students, or maybe it was a team, but it kind of caught the school off guard. It wasn't an official thing. And the students started a green for Greenwood a T-shirt thing, and there was smatterings of green all over Kinnick that day. Totally forgot about that. And I get there and I start doing the actual research, and I'm like, whoops. So you're going to see a lot of this game should have been much higher. And basically, Mark, I'm starting to get emails about from people saying, man, this game's way too low, and that's fine. I get that. That's you're going to have that, but to me, the whole thing was about trying to get the material in front of people, because you remember, for a long time, we were not really even on the internet. We were one of the first places to just go to Sub, and that was it. We went to Sub and nobody could find us on the internet. So a lot of these things have never even been on the internet. So, kind of wanted to put the material in front of people. It ended up being a heck of a sinkhole, because, oh man, I'm still not done. And, you get pulled in and you start to remember things about games, like the green for Greenwood. And then there was, I think now we're in the point now where all the games have a little bit of weight to them. So anyway, that just going back and seeing all the little things that happen, it's just been a blast. It's been a blast for me. I've had a great time. I hope readers are enjoying it.
Yeah. I think one interesting thing, and you wrote about this recently, was that, everybody views it differently. You view it a bit differently than Sam Paxton. I know your Knight sports editor, yeah. Wonderful guy, and others on the desk that really helped you through this. And let's not forget the photographers either that have come up with some great pictures.
Yeah, and it's been Sam has been a real driver here. He and John Kurth is another Knight desk sports guy. I told them right at the beginning, okay, I'm a football scientist here. You know, when I see a team block two field goals to win a game, like Iowa did in 2009 against Northern Iowa, to me that's a football miracle, and I'm going to rate that game really, really high. And then those guys look at it more kind of as fans, and there's nothing wrong with that. Sam's a very passionate Iowa fan, and John is too. And I'm like, okay, you guys put the fan spin on it, because I don't have it, and I'm not going to pretend that I know it, because everybody has a little bit of different camera angle from every game. Players, they're obviously in it. Coaches, fans, media. One of the funnest things about this is getting some of the little stories, like, oh yeah, today, Michigan State, 2012, it was a horrible game, windy, cold, and it was a 1916 game in two overtimes. I get on Twitter and there's a guy, yeah, I had a friend who got a little inebriated, woke up about an hour and a half after the game, soaking wet. And I said, well, you know what? He didn't miss a lot. And that game was 1916, two overtime. So yeah, he didn't miss a lot. But just a little bit, the memories from fans. Mark, that's a great point. Everybody has a little bit different camera angle from every game. And man, I would not claim to have the exact perfect one. I just have mine.
But it's the whole purpose, I think, Mark, is it's a discussion point. And to go over all 143 victories, I'd like to go back and do 143 of Hayden. I don't know how I go about it, because there's There's so many. And one other thing, you know, it's not the greatest games in Kirk Ferentz's career. Some of the losses were the greater games, I think.
Absolutely. Number one on that list, probably 2015 Big Ten Championship.
Yeah, yeah.
That game is an epic novel waiting to happen. I mean, somebody will go back one of these years and have a New York Times bestseller just going over every one of the 22 plays that Michigan State needed to win that game. Yeah, and I got a little trickle of people saying, "Hey, how about the losses?" I'm like, "Well, maybe next year." the wins have killed me. So let's just count on the wins right now. But one thing, that's a great point. I would read the heck out of that, Mark, if you went back and did Hayden. But there's a huge thing there. The Hayden reference material is much harder to get to because it's not, there was no online. Archival stuff is, you know, unless you want to get into the microfiche and stuff, pretty hit and miss. So that I'll let you have that one. That's going to be a little tougher deal.
I'll share greatest moments in Iowa Hawkeye football history with you, okay?
There you go. That sounds great.
Tougher to do, identify the top 10 or the bottom 10?
Well, I kind of put a Twitter poll on at least the bottom one. And I let people vote between, I can't remember what the other option was at this point, but number 143 was 2014 Ball State. 2014 was that football year. Nobody ended up happy that year. Maybe C.J. Beathard, that was about it. But beyond that, it rough year, and the wins that year weren't fun and were hard to come by. And also a huge factor in how I sort of did this was, you know, good years, they're a lot higher. 2002, 2009, they're a lot higher. 2004, I think we've got a ton of 2004 games to go yet. And then there are bad years. And 2014, I count that as a bad year, 7-6 and a total Avalanche defeat in the bowl game. I let people vote on 143 and they picked that one. Top 10's. That one, that there will be some feedback on that. Probably some angry people. Maybe some, you know, people who want to just make their point about where they think these games should be and how stupid I was to rate them the way I did. I'm sure we're going to get in that. But to me, the top 10 is more of like, really, I felt those. And I'm invested in what those games are because I really, you know, 143 games, I better have a pretty good opinion on what the top 10 should be. And I think I got it, but we'll see. I mean, there'll be debate. I guarantee that.
I don't want to spoil the outcome. I want people to pick up the Gazette on Sunday and read it online. But was number one clear cut?
It was for me.
Okay.
I'm losing my voice a little bit. To me, number one was there's a little bit of personal sort of narrative maybe going mm-hmm. through that one. You know, the game of football is it's hard to go through family events. I'll just leave it at that. This is the tease. It's hard to go through some family events that no one wants to go through. And to tie that into major college football and into life, it's really – there's a game out there that fascinates me and will always fascinate me. And I think I just probably gave everything away, but that's fine. But I do think, you know, the top 10 was more of a games that I felt invested in and that I better be willing to argue.
Can't wait to read it and see it this coming Sunday, Mark, and online. Mark Morehouse of the Gazette joining us on this Monday edition of the Gym Class 336. Let's switch gears a little bit, and a lot of talk the last week about Urban Meyer. You were at Big Ten Football Media Days. You heard what he had to say. You've read his statement of last Friday. I guess your thoughts on this situation?
Well, it seems to me that there are some curves in this that, to me, need to be answered yet before you can come to a final conclusion whether or not to shoot him into space or to keep him on the pedestal that is being the Ohio State football coach. Those questions to me have not been answered yet. And what the news today was Ohio State's, or I think it was yesterday, today, this morning, Ohio State says that the independent investigation will last 2 weeks, which is pretty convenient because, you know, football season starts in a couple weeks. So mm-hmm. I don't know if they tip their hand there a little bit, but they expect to be over in 2 weeks. If he knew about it and he didn't, you know, what I think it's for me, Mark, it's hard to get past the fact that he left the guy, kept the guy on staff from 2009 to 2015.
Yeah.
And just that question in and of itself, and the fact that that clause was put into Myers and a lot of coaches, I think all the football coaches at Ohio State, the Title IX clause that they put in their contracts last year, I think there had to be a reason for that. And I think we'll probably have that unwound. And I just wonder if there's enough documentation out there to see, to show how much detail what Meyer may or may not have known. Either way, that's what's going to make, going to be the rudder for where this case goes for me. Of course, if he knew about it and he tried to downplay it and he tried to keep the guy on, there's no college in America that would keep him on. But if there, if he did the right moves and Ohio State fumbled it from there, well, what is this now? The third or fourth one of these, including Penn State, where stuff did get supposedly got kicked upstairs and was met with an action. So if that's the case, then there's a lot of people in trouble at Ohio State, and, a lot of people should be fired. I don't know if Urban Meyer is one of those people yet.
You know, Mark, I read his statement on Friday, and he pretty much admitted to knowing about it because he said that he reported it to his superiors in 2015. That's an admission right there in my mind, mm-hmm. unlike what he said at Big Ten Football Media Days.
Yeah, he really botched that. He did come out and say that he failed on that front, and he did. I mean, that was pathetic. But that's what we need to find out, Mark. I mean, what happens after, you know, he claims that he told Ohio State that that was going on, and did Ohio State sit with that on its desk and not do anything? I mean, that's what we need to find out here. If Meyer sort of just wrote a note and slid it under somebody's door,
mm-hmm.
or if he rang the bells and said, hey, everybody, we need some help here. We need some counseling, yada, yada, or whatever action needs to take place. Didn't, obviously. And so somebody's going to fall for that. Is it Meyer? Is it some Ohio State assistant AD? I don't know yet. That's really the question. And the Mark, the rush to judgment on this, I get it, and it's fine. But I've never seen anything like this. I mean, I listened to the XM Full Ride with Rick Neuheisel show. I love listening to Rick Neuheisel. I think he's fantastic. But their show became, you know, there was a breezy recruiting topic, and then after a break, this thing broke, and then it was fire Urban Meyer for the next 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's, you know, I can't go there yet. I want to see what happens, and in 2 weeks, we'll all know, hopefully.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Just knowing what we know right now, we can have our judgments, but that could all change based on what we might find out in the next couple weeks. Interestingly enough, Iowa and Ohio State don't get together this year, especially in Iowa City, because I'm going to be interested if Meyer is still the coach, at least during the Big Ten season, what his reception will be across the Big Ten.
Yeah, that's a great question. Usually these types of things, I think, and there's, you know, there's been players who've gone through with horrible things that they've done and they've stayed on the field. I've not noticed Kinnick really come down on those people. I think basketball is a little more easy. It's a little easier to figure out,
mm-hmm.
you know, what the crowd chant is. But in football, it's a little more difficult. I think also people kind of get swept up in football. And the next time Ohio State comes to Kinnick, I think there'll be a lot of people swept up in it because of what happened last year.
Iowa practice has started. And I'm curious, one thing, Mark, your opinion of what that Iowa offensive line is going to look like for that opener against Northern Illinois, knowing that Tristan Wirfs will be serving a one-game suspension?
That's a great question. I think there's also still some moving parts in that group. And one thing, you know, to me, Levi Paulson, is he healthy? I mean, he had an injury that was bad enough to keep him out for spring. You know, is he healthy? Is he back? Is he a guy that you can count on to be starter? I think there's one guy who hard to gauge and maybe where he's at right now exactly, but in camp, I think some of these questions are starting to be answered. And Cole Banwer is a guy who could really add a lot to Iowa this year, I think. I think they need a few more options on the inside of the offensive line because, you know, Keegan Render's moving to a new spot. Levi Paulson will be a first-year starter. He's a fourth-year player, but he'll be a first-year starter. And then the other guard, I'm blanking on the other guard right now. I'm just Ross Reynolds. I think Ross Reynolds will be fine. He got some really good playing time last year on a rotation basis. But I think he's ready. I think he's big enough, and I think he's ready. So I'm mildly optimistic on the offensive line, but if you look at what didn't work last year, it was the offensive line, and it was the running game. And they still need to answer that question. They still need to show people that against a team like, say, Wisconsin, that they can rush for more than 100 yards and win the game. So to me, the offensive line has something to show this year. Has something to, I don't want to say prove, because I don't think an Iowa offensive line really has to prove itself, but it has to meet standard. And I think this group is going to, that's assignment number one for these guys.
I've heard Mark Kellenberger's name come up too.
Yeah, I think he probably is the guy who gets the start in week one with Tristan Wirfs out. He probably gets the start. Levi Paulson has also played there. I wouldn't be surprised. I've kind of given the offensive line a little thought, and I think they are kind of gotten for some depth. And I wouldn't be shocked to see a couple of true freshmen, now that they have the four games, I wouldn't be shocked to see if they're handling practice right now, to see the new kid from Solon, Tyler Linderbaum, mm-hmm. and Jeff Jenkins. I think both those guys, I know Linderbaum is a defensive tackle right now. I think they're probably going to give that, because I think they see Nathan Budget in him. So they're probably going to exhaust that a little bit, or at least give that a run. But I think if he ends up playing this year, it'll probably be on the offensive line. And I think that Jeff Jenkins, also a recruit from Crystal Lake, Illinois, I think he's a guy who gets a long look. I think he feels like a Sean Welch type.
I want to ask you, and maybe this is really unfair, but what the hell? Hayden Fry and Kirk Ferentz each have coached 20 seasons, and each has 143 victories. If you lay their resumes side by side, what do you see?
Just in their times in Iowa, I mean, if you just take that in a vacuum, you see a standard that's hard to keep, I think. I think enough fans realize how hard it is to win here, and I know people get sick of hearing that, but it is. I mean, their resumes are pretty much the same. I think Kirk obviously has more games, when they switch to 12 games, he's had more opportunities for wins.
Mm-hmm.
The bowls, I think, are even. The Big Ten championships are pretty much even. But I think if you extrapolate, I think Hayden's victory was breathing life back into a dormant program.
Yes.
I mean, 19 non-winning seasons. I mean, Hayden's a statue at this program, because without Hayden, there's no Ferentz. And so I think Hayden, if you take that end of things, yes. I mean, that's, you kind of got to give edge Hayden. But I think it's a very different Big Ten that Ferentz is in now. I mean, there's no 8-4 teams going to the Rose Bowl anymore. The Big Ten rule where, okay, the last team to go, the last team not to have gone, well, you're going to the Rose Bowl this year. Hey, congratulations, 8-4.
Mm-hmm.
That's never going to happen again. You've got to go to Indianapolis, and you've got to match up with the Beast in the East. And so it's going to be very, very difficult to get, what I kind of say now. I mean, if we're going to call Big Ten championships and tournament basketball championships, you have to beat, the Big Ten West is nice, and I think Ferentz has even kind of said this. Big Ten West, winning the division is nice, but it's a championship season when you win in Indianapolis, and to me, that's really, really hard to get. So both coaches had, Ferentz maintaining the internet age and, recruiting in the now with recruiting services, pulling at every kid for every bit of information. It's different. Hayden had a little quieter run that way, but he also had a huge front-end hill to climb with 19 dormant seasons in Iowa.
Yeah, I'd hate to pick. Both have had remarkable careers. I think what you nailed it, and the difference was that Hayden Fry changed the culture of the Iowa program, and I don't know how many wins that equates to, but you remember back in the day, the string of losing seasons, and then the changing the uniforms and changing the attitude, and right on down the line. But as you said, without a Hayden Fry, there was no Kirk Ferentz either. So,
yeah, imagine if Hayden come in. What if Hayden had come in and bombed?
Yeah,
I don't even want to think about that. Let's not even talk about that. It's a nice summer day. Let's not ruin
True enough. Hey, Mark, we'll let you go. Really appreciate you joining us, and look forward to seeing in print and online your top 24, 25 this weekend?
I think that's what it is.
Okay.
Sam's in charge of that one. I still have 17 more of these babies to write.
Well, I'll let you get to it. Thanks, Mark, and I will talk to you soon.
Thank you, Mark. Thanks for having me on, you guys.
You bet. Mark Morehouse of the Gazette joining us, and I think a fascinating project and probably a no-win project to come up with a ranking of 143 victories in the Kirk Ferentz era. But nevertheless, we talked about Hayden Fry. Fry Fest coming up, Kyle, on Friday, August 31st. This week, Kyle and I will be giving you a chance to win four admission wristbands to the Fry Fest High Porch Block Party on Friday, August 31st. And if you haven't been there, there's a Hawkeye pep rally, former player panel discussions, autograph sessions, Hawkeye fashion show, Piano Palooza, and a concert that night of the 31st. By the way, the Todd Brommelkamp show with Todd and Alex Kuhn will be broadcasting live 4 to 7 on the 31st from the world's largest Hawkeye trade show. So right now, caller number 6, you're going to win four admission wristbands to Fry Fest. Welcome back. Coming up on 3:52 on the Gym Class today, Mark Dukes and Kyle Mann joining you all week. Scott Unash enjoying his last week of vacation for 2018. He will be back on Monday. But a reminder, this Saturday, Scott will have his the start of his high school football previews. That at 9 a.m. on Saturday with Jefferson Prairie and Xavier, the first three out of the chute. And then in the weeks to follow, the rest of the Metro teams and high school football practices beginning today, except for those who are going to play week zero. They started last week, but the vast majority of high school teams beginning practice today. That's true of golf and some other fall sports as well. Speaking of golf, congratulations to Chris James winning his fourth men's city amateur golf championship. He joins Sam Ayassi and Bob Colesmith as the only four-time winners of the event. Great accomplishment for Chris James, who's also the Washington girls basketball coach, in addition to Linmar golf coach. Chris, at age 32, has a pretty good chance of winning additional city amateur championships. So congratulations, Chris. We'll see you soon on the tailgate tour as Scott and I travel around the metro area to different campuses in the fall. That's coming up very, very soon. Also coming up soon this week, the last of the four majors, the PGA Championship at Belrive Country Club in St. Louis, a neighborhood that our own Alex Kuhn knows very well. Scott Unash, while on vacation, will be attending at least one or two days of that tournament. And Michael Loss, our every other Monday guest on the Gym Class, covering that event, as well as Zach Johnson, coming up a top 20 in the WGC Bridgestone Invitational over the weekend. Zach tying for 17th in that event. He'll be involved in the PGA, as will Brown Deer Country Club pro Sean McCarty. Sean paired with Brant Snedeker in the first couple rounds of the PGA Championship, and that's definitely going to be a thrill, not only for Zach, but especially so for Sean, club pro, trying to compete against the big boys. Tomorrow we're going to be joined by Joe Rivera, talk a lot of Major League Baseball, Kyle. I think I said it on the show, I called two divisions. With what Boston did to New York over the weekend, I think that is pretty much sealed up the NL East. And I'm still going to call this AL Central for Cleveland. But other than that, man, it's tight across the board.
It really is. And, I mean, the Red Sox have shown really no signs of slowing down. There's no reason to expect them to, you know, lose hold of that division. But with that said, I think the Yankees, I mean, the Red Sox are very good. They're nine and a half games ahead, but the Yankees are one of the top three teams in baseball. Maybe the Red Sox don't necessarily hit a skid, but But I'm not going to put it against, put it past the Yankees to get very hot and at least make something of that division. But for the most part, you're right. We've got a lot of really good races coming down the line here. And I think at the same time last year, there were a good handful of divisions that were done. The Dodgers were done by now. I believe the Astros were done by now. So I think this is going to be a more competitive second half.
The AL West is tightened with Oakland winning, it seems, more often than not. Oakland, 21 games over 500 and within four of the Astros. So.
And just bolstered their bullpen, their rotation.
Yeah. So that's going to be an interesting team to watch down down the road. Again, we'll talk a lot of baseball tomorrow with Joe Rivera, not only about the races, but some of the impact of trades as the trade deadline passed on the 31st of July. Also, we anticipate news coming out very soon. Jeff Johnson putting this out yesterday that the Iowa Conference is going to rebrand itself and be called the American Rivers Conference. Of course, the Iowa Conference has brought in Nebraska Wesleyan, the only non-Iowa school in the league. So when that news comes out officially, I'm sure we can get Chuck Yergin, the commissioner of the Iowa Conference, on the line and talk about that decision. The Iowa Conference has been around a long time, but I'm sure with the addition of Nebraska Wesleyan, perhaps, you know, other moves in the future, the move to what apparently is going to be called the American Rivers Conference, that'll take some getting used to, no doubt about it. But we'll give you that that situation when it does, and if it does come up. Again, the Colonels are winner 3-2 this afternoon, breaking a five-game losing streak, and Edouard Colina with the nice pitching performance this afternoon. Tonight, the Twins at Cleveland, game 1 of 4. We'll join it in progress at 7 p.m. on 107.5 FM. For now, appreciate Kyle Mann sitting in. And thanks to Mark Morehouse of the Gazette for joining us today on the Gym Class.